a native Kansas Cityan, like Kansas City feels huge. I loved being like walking the streets among the really tall buildings. It just felt like so energizing and really cool. And so I would go down there a couple of times a year. And on this one particular visit, we were heading down there, and my dad told me that the president of the United States was in town, and that if we were super lucky, maybe we would catch a glimpse of the motorcade downtown. And so we were walking. We had to kind of park a couple blocks away from the shop. And so we were walking, and off in the distance, we heard a single siren, you know? And both my dad and I looked at each other like, ooh, maybe this is it, but it's downtown, so you don't really know. So we waited, and that siren grew closer and closer and closer, and it started, like, by this point, it was, like, blaring. And, you know, once it kind of gets into the downtown buildings, you know, it's kind of reverberating off the buildings, and it was just piercingly loud. And this motorcycle cop that was causing the siren pulled right up in front of us at our intersection and stopped. And I was like, all right, this is exciting, you know. And so, but still, it's just one motorcycle cop, you know. And so we waited, and we thought, well, maybe that's it. And then another siren off in the distance. And so pretty soon, our intersection and the intersections near us were just full of motorcycle cops blocking all the traffic. And then we had to wait more. We're like, okay, when is it coming, you know? And so then finally, one black car down the road, you know? But we knew that wasn't it. It's not the first black car, you know? And so another black car, shoo, shoo, shoo. And then after that came the SUVs, you know, and a black SUV, go, go, go. And I bet you could have picked my jaw up off the floor. My eyes were as big as saucers. I was just, like, so excited to see the motorcade. And so finally, the biggest car that I had ever seen in my life, you know, the presidential limo with those American flags staked at all the four corners, came pulling down the road, and I was leaning out, you know, like trying to catch a glimpse inside those tinted windows to see the most powerful leader in the world. You know, I was so, so excited. That memory is burned into my brain. And I remember the, albeit brief, but intense feeling of anticipation that I felt, waiting to see the president's car. You know, something that I had only seen on TV before, you know? And the actual president of the United States was like 20 feet away from me on the road, you know? It's when you're a kid, like the president is like the coolest thing in the world. I'm a little jaded now as an adult, but but it was like so amazing to see this motorcade. And to experience the anticipation of someone is coming. From that very first siren until the last siren pulled away, you know, it was just this intense feeling of anticipation and excitement. Well, today, is our second Sunday in Advent, a season where we wait in anticipation for the Lord. We both wait with people from 2,000 years ago, waiting, you know, in solidarity with those people who are waiting for the first coming of Jesus. And we wait, too, for the people around the world and people in our very lives and us waiting for the second coming of Jesus. And our text this morning is about John the Baptist. And John the Baptist is the one who paved the way and announced that coming, that first coming of Jesus. I like to think about John the Baptist as that first siren that we heard in downtown that morning. You know, starts off in the distance and getting louder and louder and louder, being kind of abrasive. John the Baptist, if you read John the Baptist, he's a little abrasive, you know, just like that siren was in the buildings that day. But he is announcing, someone is coming. Get ready. Someone is coming. Well, you might notice that in the reading that Allie just read for us, that Jesus' name is not mentioned one time. Not even once. But I want to make the case that this passage actually has a lot to tell us about Jesus. And so we're going to look at it under three headings. First, who is it that is coming? Number two, where do we find him? And number three, where is he going? Who's coming? Where do we find him? and where is he going? So first, who is he? Who is this one that is coming? Well, Matthew, the writer, tells us who John is announcing, and it is a bombshell in literature, a bombshell in history. See, Matthew describes John the Baptist in this way from the 40th chapter of Isaiah. He says this, "The voice of one crying in the wilderness, prepare the way of the Lord, make straight his paths." Well, let me tell you why that is so significant. You see, if you were to go back and read the 40th chapter of Isaiah, which, by the way, was written 700 years before Jesus, the 40th chapter of Isaiah tells us that someday the Lord himself will visit Jerusalem and show the nations his glory, and that someone will come before him to announce his way. And Matthew, the gospel writer, is saying that John the Baptist is that messenger. He's the messenger, and so thus, the one that is coming must be the Lord. Jesus must be the Lord. Well, when this passage says, prepare the way of the Lord, that word Lord is in Isaiah is the word Yahweh. Yahweh, the very personal name of God. It's not just a descriptive word, it is the very name of God. The name that God gave to Moses from the burning bush. This is my name, Yahweh. A name that the Jewish people didn't dare write down or even speak. It was that holy and sacred. And if John is the messenger, then the rightful ruler, the Lord himself, the creator of heaven and earth, he is the one that is coming. This was a bombshell. The immortal has become mortal. The impossible has become possible. The unapproachable has become someone that we can touch. The totally invulnerable has become vulnerable. The time is now. The Lord, God, is here. God has become uniquely born in the person of Jesus. Both transcendent and intensely vulnerable and loving. And if you believe this, it reorients your life. It's a bombshell. So we have to ask ourselves that question. Do we feel it? Do we experience it as a bombshell? You know, many people have a hard time believing this. Many people, probably many of us. You may think, you know, I can't quite get there. I can be down with Jesus as an amazing teacher, but God incarnate, it's harder for me to wrap my mind around. You may say, Dean, well, you know, the people back then, 2,000 years ago, they were more primitive people. It was easier for them to, like, get on board with something like this. We're a modern people. We can't be expected to believe that the God of the universe was born as a human being. There are far too many barriers, you may think. Well, let me say this. All the original believers, all of the original worshipers of Jesus had far more barriers than we do to believing this. Far more barriers. Remember, they didn't even dare write or speak his name. You guys remember that that diagram that Patrick put up last week of kind of the old paradigm of understanding the coming of the Messiah and the new paradigm? You know, they thought that when the Messiah came, that he would be riding on the clouds and that all would be made right in an instant. That was their paradigm for understanding. They had no frame of reference for understanding that Yahweh God would be born to a below average carpenter's son. It was utterly opposed to everything they believed about reality. And these were the people that were falling down and worshiping Jesus. How did they overcome those obstacles? Well, that's kind of what the church year, we're going to spell out. You know, we just started the church year, you know, starting with Advent, and we tell the story for a year about the Lord and his people. And so we're going to get to explore that. I don't have to lay all that for you this morning. But those are the people that came to believe. They internalized it, and it changed them. The one that's coming, the one that John is announcing, is God himself, uniquely born in the person of Jesus. So now, where do we find him? Where do we find him? The answer is this: in the wilderness. We find him in the wilderness. You have to go out to the wilderness to find him. That's where John was. That's where the people were going out to be baptized. And that's where Jesus himself went. Wilderness. Now the word wilderness is not a great translation for us these days. So when you think wilderness, I'm guessing you think along the lines that I do. When we hear the word wilderness, we think, probably many of us, like the forest, right? The wilderness is like the dense forest. And the forest is full of life, right? It has huge trees and it has lots of vegetation on the ground, and there's animals of all shapes and sizes. It's teeming with insects. It's defined by life. The forest is full of life. Everywhere you look, you see life. And that means that it's not impossible for a person to survive there, right? It's not altogether hostile to the survival of us. Many of you are like, yeah, it's impossible for me to survive there. But at least hypothetically, there's life there. There's vegetation, there's animals, there's water in the wilderness. And that is exactly why it's not a great word for us. Because when Isaiah and when Matthew talked about wilderness, they did not mean the dense forest full of life. When they said the word wilderness, they meant desert. The exact opposite of a dense forest. They meant a place that was barren of life. There's no life. It cannot sustain life. You know what you find in the desert? You may find some thorns, right? It can't produce lush vegetation, so it produces these tough thorns. If you're in the desert, that kind of wilderness, you experience thirst, right? There's no water to be found. And thirdly, if you find yourself in the desert, you usually find yourself there alone, because the desert can't sustain one life, much less an entire community. It's a place marked by thorns, a place marked by thirst, and a place marked by loneliness. Yet, the message of the Bible is that it's there, in the wilderness, that we find God. Do you remember where Moses encountered God in the burning bush? It was in the wilderness. Do you remember where Jacob wrestled with God face to face? It was in the wilderness. Do you remember where the Israelites kind of became God's people in earnest? It wasn't in Egypt. It was in the desert, in Sinai, the wilderness. So why? Why the wilderness? Why is wilderness the place where we encounter God? Because the wilderness is a place where you cannot stay alive without the intervention of God. Wilderness is where you come to realize that God is not an add-on. In the wilderness, all wells run dry except the well of God. And what does that have to do with us? It has everything to do with us. We still encounter God in the wilderness. We still meet him there. It's in those times, those seasons marked by what we'd call the desert or the wilderness, that we meet him. The times when all of our other wells run dry, when where we realize that God isn't an add-on, where we realize that the things that we thought could sustain us, could make us happy, are all empty wells. This is where we meet God, the wilderness. You know, I've been reflecting on that in my life this week. I encourage you to do the same. Like, you know, as I think back on my life, I think about the time when family tragedy struck when I was a kid. And everything that I banked on as reliable and predictable was shattered. The wilderness. And I met God there. I think about as an adult dealing with like infertility and stuff and just feeling so desperate and totally helpless where all my other wells had run dry. The wilderness. And I met God there. I think about even in my life some mission trips that I went on where all the daily comforts of my life, the little wells that I draw on every day were turned off. The wilderness, and I met God there. My hunch is that if you looked back on your life, you'd see that it is often in the wilderness that you too meet him. See, we often are quick to put our hope and our happiness and our satisfaction in like our job, our money, our family, but we really shouldn't because they're bad wells to rely on. You know, we hold these things up and we trust and we think that if my family was just perfect or my job was just perfect, then I'd be happy and satisfied. Well, for one, for most of us, we never attain to that perfection that we wanted in the first place. And here's the crazy thing. Even if you do attain it, even if you do land the perfect job, even if your family finally has it all together, you will realize that that too is an empty well. Even the very best of what we want is an empty well. So this is what it means to truly meet Jesus. It means that we are shaken, our very foundation of our life is shaken. We become desperate for God. Every well will run dry except the well of God. And it's then, in the wilderness, that you realize that without God, you are in trouble. That's when you're ready to meet Jesus. Let me say one more thing before we go to that last point about baptism. You know, John the Baptist was baptizing people. Have you ever stopped to think about, like, what is like, how did baptism get started? Like, where did that come from? Well, baptism was something that the people of God had been practicing for centuries as a way of preparing themselves to encounter God in the temple. So, for instance, a Jewish person, before he went to enter the temple in order to purify himself, would baptize or wash his hands. It was like these ceremonial washings. Even the Gentiles, when they were coming into the temple, they too had to baptize or wash themselves, except they had to wash not just their hands, but their entire body. So they had practiced for centuries this idea of baptism, but John changed something very crucial about baptism, and it's this. Baptism is not something that you do to yourself. Baptism is something that you need someone else to do for you. I need to baptize you, John was saying. You cannot do it yourself. In other words, you must receive your fitness for God from someone else. You cannot save yourself. As a pastor, I interact with people all the time who are in these seasons of wilderness. They're in these places where they realize that the wells that they had been drawing from have run dry. And oftentimes, their answer to those wells running dry are to kind of get their life in order. You know, they think to themselves, well, now I need to change my behavior. I need to stop doing all that stuff that I shouldn't do. I should read my Bible more. And I think John the Baptist would say this to those people. Are you still trying to baptize yourself? By doing all of these things, haven't you just transferred your well to another empty well? Still trying to baptize yourself instead of going to someone else. All right, lastly. So we talked about who's coming, where can you find him, and now the last part, where is he going? Where is he going? We're going to go back to that passage from Isaiah 40. It says this, prepare the way of the Lord, you remember, make his paths straight. And so what does that even mean? What does it mean to make his paths straight? Well, you see, in the ancient cultures, this is what they would do in preparation for the arrival of a king. So if a king was coming to your land, they would literally build new roads. You know, they would lower the high places and raise up the low places so that as the king came into town, they would have a smooth road to ride in on. They wanted to put on their best face for the king. By the way, there are still cultures in modern cultures that are doing this. Jenny and I were in Uganda in 2009, and they were preparing for the visit of the Queen of England. And they were, like, the entire town was being renovated, the entire city. You know, they were building a new airport so that one person could land there. They were building brand new roads just for the Queen of England. The entire town was getting a facelift. Well, in those days, in Jesus' days, they didn't have cranes and bulldozers to do that. So do you know how they made new roads? You know how they lowered those high places and raised those low places? They did it using lots and lots of slaves. So when the king was coming, it meant that a lot of slaves worked tirelessly in preparation for his coming. Many of them losing their very lives on that project. So when a king came, it was good news to some, and it was very bad, very oppressive news to many, many more. In the same way, I think a lot of people today, when they think of Jesus as a king, it's not good, but oppressive news. They don't like the way that sounds, having to submit themselves to a king. They're afraid it'll be like slavery and oppression, but it's not exactly. Why not? Well, let's go back to the text. Prepare the way of the Lord. That word, prepare the way, is a word hodos. It means the road. So prepare the road for the Lord. Well, that word, hodos, is used again in the 20th chapter of Matthew. Matthew uses it at the beginning in chapter 3, and he comes back to it at the end in chapter 20, and he says this. Now, Jesus was going up to Jerusalem, and on the way, or on the road, or on the hodos, he took the 12 aside and said, we're going to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man will be delivered to the chief priests and the teachers of the law. And they will condemn him to death and will hand him over to the Gentiles to be mocked and flogged and crucified. And on the third day, he will be raised to life. So you see, in Matthew's gospel, the way, the hodos, the road of the Lord is not like other kings. It's not a road to a throne. It's instead a road to the cross. The cross is the opposite of a throne, a place of helplessness. Kings generally sit on thrones and are served by slaves, but Jesus' road led him to a cross where he set the slaves free. To put it another way, Jesus went into the ultimate wilderness and he lost God. He lost God so that we can find him. When he went into that wilderness, he too found thorns. Thorns on his head, thorns in his hands and in his feet. And he found thirst as he hung on the cross, begged for something to drink. And he found to loneliness when he cried out, "My God, why have you forsaken me?" He went into the wilderness and lost God so that when we go into our wilderness, we can find him. Well, have you met the Lord in the wilderness? You know, if your response internally to hearing about and to reflecting on the things that God has done, that Jesus has done for you, if your response is, "That's nice," or that's cool, like maybe you haven't really met him. Maybe you haven't felt that desperation for him, realizing that all other wells are dry and that if you don't turn to him, you might in fact die. And maybe some of you this morning are walking through the wilderness yourself in this season. As we've been saying, it's Advent, time of waiting. And maybe some of you are waiting for a job, waiting for a spouse or a child, waiting for a clean bill of health. Maybe it's a difficult season. Well, consider me the one who has been sent to tell you that this is an opportunity to meet Jesus in a deeper way in your wilderness. We're going to take a few minutes here. You know, we were talking this week, and we just felt like it might be good to take this Sunday, and right after the message here, pray for people who are in one of those two camps. And so here in just a few minutes, I'm going to invite, if that is you this morning, if you either are recognizing that your wells that you go to are actually empty wells, and you're ready to instead find the well of God, if that's you, or if you're in the wilderness yourself and you're waiting for God and you need to meet him today, I want to encourage you just to here in a few minutes to come forward. Kirk's going to be up here on this side. I'll be over here. The prayer team will come up. And Micah's going to do a song. And I just encourage you to come forward and just be prayed for just for a few minutes. The rest of you will be able to sing. It won't be awkward or anything. But if you fit one of those demographics this morning, I just encourage you to come forward. So can we stand? And if either of those is you this morning, I invite you to come and receive prayer.